The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Exciting news! October sees the launch of the world's first live healthy breakfast show right here on UK Health Radio. Presented by the amazing Dr. Shan Hussein every weekday from 7 till 9 a.m. Also live streamed via YouTube and available on UK Health Radio's Listen on Demand for our global audience. Start your day the healthy way.
Hello and welcome to Talk Fertility, a show where we do just that, talk about fertility. I'm Natalie Silverman, host of the Fertility Podcast, which I launched in 2015, once successfully pregnant after having fertility treatment.
And I'm Kate Davis, a trained fertility nurse and founder of Your Fertility Journey, where I work one-to-one with women and couples to help them understand and optimise their fertility.
So, okay, I'm looking forward to another of our Meet the Makers conversations, because the last one I had to share with you in a slightly different way, didn't I? I sent you the conversation that I'd had with Katie and Tom, who had created these support socks, and you were quite impressed because you'd kind of poo-pooed it initially, hadn't you?
I did, and I felt really bad. And I wasn't poo-pooing them, but poo-pooing the whole idea of thinking that, oh my goodness, this is the whole wear pair of socks when you're having your embryo transfer and you'll have more success thing. And then I was really relieved to hear that actually it's not that at all. It was just so much fun wearing a pair of pretty socks while you're going through your embryo transfer or your egg collection, and how with those two, it was all about getting conversations started and getting support from the community.
There is amazing stuff on Instagram, isn't there? And we're always kind of quite fascinated as to what we find. It comes in different shapes and sizes. And we're going to be chatting with Arielle Spiegel, who's created this platform as a result of her own fertility struggles. And are you surprised by the variety of things that you see people creating? On this series alone, we've spoken to, obviously, Caroline from The Kitch Hen about the biscuits. We've talked to Natalie the Journals. We've talked to Natasha with Fertilibox, which is health and beauty products as well as nutritional advice. It's a real variety of things we're finding, isn't it?
It is. It's so diverse. And I think what I find amazing is where do these ideas come from? I wish I could be that creative to come up with a fabulous idea that some of these people have had. But I'm not creative enough, unfortunately.
Well, I don't think you should sell yourself short. You have actually got a very exciting PCOS journal that we've spoken about in a previous episode available for people.
Yes, but not
even
my creativity.
That is on the back, that's off the back of our Meet the Maker, Natalie, as we just mentioned before.
Absolutely.
Well, keep listening to the end because we'll give you our email. If you're making something as a result of your infertility struggle and you'd like to tell us about it, we'd love to hear from you. For now, though, here's Arielle. So welcome to another episode of Talk Fertility, and this is another Meet the Makers episode, something that I launched on the Fertility Podcast because I kept noticing people making really cool stuff out of what is just a rubbish situation to be in, this infertility journey, which takes us on such a kind of zigzag mission of ups and downs and friendships and disappointments and so many different emotions. And Kate and I were quite intrigued to find out more about our guest. So without further ado, we're going to welcome Arielle Spiegel, who is the founder of Co-Fertility, to the show. Hello.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hi.
Well, we managed through different time zones and through various background noises that we all have. This is the beauty of the kind of internet radio podcast world, is that where are you, Arielle? Where in the world?
I'm in Boston. I just moved here. I was living in New York City for like almost 10 years and just moved to Boston a couple months ago.
I'm so jealous. I so want to visit Boston.
Oh, come visit, please. I like need more friends here. Boston's great. My husband and I are both from the Boston area. So for us, it was kind of like moving back home. And it's awesome. It's a really cool city.
I've heard great things. Well, let's just find a bit more out about Co-Fertility, because it has been created as a result of your infertility struggles, and you're pretty open on your social channels as to what's been going on, which we'll talk about more. But do you want to just start at the point that you decided to set up the platform?
Yeah. So let's see. My husband and I at this point have been trying for probably about 2.5 years. And I should say my background, I previously kind of worked on the digital marketing brand side. So my, you know, in my experience, I was always really used to like bringing brands to life. But in my personal experience, I was really struggling with infertility on my own. And every time I had a question related to my fertility journey, whenever I went searching for answers, whether it was through Google or through search or, you know, on social or wherever, the experience was just really poor. And what you were getting back were forums that look like they're a million years old, or blogs that were super anecdotal, or, you know, like WebMD or clinic websites that, you know, just really have zero brand personality whatsoever. And coming from a brand marketing side, I was just like, why is no brand owning this in a way that feels like something I would connect with as a consumer? You know, informative, educational, but also like with an actual personality and keeping it real. And that's kind of where CoFertility started. And we officially launched in June. We say we aim to answer every fertility-related question out there. And we do that through a variety of really useful content that kind of spans the fertility journey, as well as several hopefully very user-friendly interactive tools that just aim to uncomplicate the world of fertility.
There's definitely a lot of information on there, considering you started in June.
Yeah, thank you. And all of our content, it's based on what we know people are actually trying to learn more about. You know, it's based on what we see as trending, people submitting questions on our site, you know, other strategic research to understand just like what these conversations are like that are happening out there, and what people are trying to learn more about. So, you know, obviously for anybody who's been down this like really shitty road, you know that even if you have access to amazing doctors and amazing care and great friends and supportive family and all that good stuff, all you have are questions, and, you know, you can't help but turn to online when you have those questions in the middle of the night, or, you know, you don't want to ask your doctor, or, you know, you're too embarrassed to ask your friends or whoever. So hopefully we're there for people in their hour of need when they just like really need that quick information.
And I was looking at your website, Ariella, and looking at your experts, and I can see that you've got a panel of experts. Tell me about how you chose them and how they answer questions. I'm assuming that you put your questions through to them, and they answer the question. How does that work?
Yeah, so that's our medical advisory board, and they're amazing. They, you know, I truly couldn't do this without them. They're incredible and just like so helpful. I'm so thankful for their expertise. So I knew from the get-go that we needed to have some really solid expertise involved from the beginning. So, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm just somebody who's been down this road and knows from personal experience about a lot of this stuff. I know from the marketing side and the brand side, but really I knew that we needed experts involved on the medical side. These are all experts that range in different areas, but all related to fertility. So we have two reproductive endocrinologists. We have a fertility focused nutritionist. We have a fertility focused Eastern medicine practitioner and acupuncturist. And then we also have a fertility focused psychotherapist on our board. And every single piece of content that we create gets passed through them as just like an added filter on top of what our writers are already creating, which, you know, of course, is requiring them to cite medical research and journals and studies and interviewing experts. They're doing that already, but the medical advisory board is really just like that added filter on top of that, just to ensure everything is super clinically sound. You know, of course, we have disclaimers on the site everywhere that this is not official medical advice, but we want our content to feel very trustworthy. And I'm so thankful to our advisory board for helping us do that.
And you're so right, aren't you? Because so a patient can go onto Dr. Google and find out so many different answers to their questions and get really confused, and they have no idea which is the truthful answer, which is giving you them the most benefit. Whereas if you've got one solid place to go where you know you can trust and you're getting all your questions answered, then that's pretty impressive, isn't it, to be able to deliver that?
Thank you. Yeah, it's a pretty overwhelming experience to be, you know, going through infertility or just trying to learn more about like tracking your fertility, learning more about your hormonal health. It's a pretty overwhelming experience to feel like you don't really have one solid place to go to for answers. And hopefully we're creating that with Co and answering the questions that people really, really have that they're struggling with.
And I wanted to just pick up on some of the content that you're sharing socially, because you've talked quite openly about the more tricky stuff. In particular, there was a post that you shared, which Kate and I were commenting on how kind of beautifully written it was, where you talked about the number of times you've been pregnant and the losses, and how you were in this no man's land, as you described it, of dealing with secondary infertility and recurrent miscarriage. And as someone who similarly is kind of in the secondary infertility space to a point, I'm interested into where you feel now you do fit when you're talking about the no man's land, how it's making you feel, and what you're getting from the community. Because we know we've got this amazing online TTC community, and you're building this platform out of it, and the way that we share and support each other. How do you feel you're fitting in?
Well, so I should clarify, my situation is not secondary infertility. Right now, we're still trying for our first. But I will say, you know, secondary infertility, we do have content on our site around secondary infertility. It's very real. It's very common. And I do think that a lot of people that are struggling with secondary infertility feel, you know, it's basically all of the stresses of infertility, but just with an added layer of guilt on top of that, right? Because, you know, in addition to just feeling like crap, you know, about everything that you're going through, you also have that, you know, added pressure of like, oh, well, I already have the one. So like, should I even feel this way? Am I allowed? Are people judging me? So that really, really sucks. And I genuinely do feel for people who are going through secondary infertility. In terms of my own journey, we're still trying for our first. So it's a little bit different than, it's somewhat different than secondary infertility, but not by too much.
Sorry, I thought I'd seen that you said something about a 4.5-year-old on that post. So I'd misread it.
Which post are you talking about?
There was one where it was the picture of you and your hubby in kind of hospital gowns, and you'd say,
"Oh, so that's not me." About your, I could see how that's confusing. So that is one of our co-fertility stories. So
she
we
looks really
have,
similar to you.
She kind of does look like me. No, I could see how that's confusing.
Now I'm looking at the pictures of the two of you. I can see that it's not.
Yeah. So she does. She kind of looks like me. So I could totally see that. But but no, that's not me. Basically, we've invited people to share their co-fertility stories using the hashtag on Instagram, co-fertility stories, to just kind of like talk about what it's like to be in it. I feel like there are a lot of accounts out there that, you know, and of course, not to marginalize anybody going through secondary infertility, but like, of course, people who have their rainbow babies and, you know, have that light at the end of the tunnel, that's amazing. But I feel like I personally felt like they were already getting highlighted enough on Instagram, and there wasn't enough conversation happening among people who are still in it, who, you know, maybe they've been down a really long journey and like it didn't end in, here's me like in my hospital gown with my baby, like crying tears of joy for all this like hard work that I went through to get to this point. That's amazing. And everyone who gets to that point should absolutely be doing that. No question. But what I wanted to highlight is like, what about the people who are just like still in it and, you know, still trying to get to that point? So that's where co-fertility stories came from. And we've gotten some really, really great stories on Instagram from people who are just kind of like going through the daily grind of infertility and what that's like. And we repost some of them. And that's what one of those posts was.
If you were just starting out researching infertility, what tips would you give for people looking to find out more?
I mean, we say that we span the full fertility journey pretty much up until pregnancy on our site, but we do still cover like things like miscarriage and chemical pregnancies and all of that. So pretty much up until like a healthy pregnancy is kind of where we kind of run up to. But we cover questions on everything from somebody who's like super early on in their journey and maybe just trying to learn more about their hormonal health or trying to track their cycle. So like between you and I, like I can tell you, I didn't even know like what ovulation even was. I did not know that was like a thing. I knew that, you know, I was supposed to get my period around once a month, you know, based on just like sexual education in school. I knew all that they really teach you is you get your period once a month and like don't have sex. And, you know, they don't really teach you like what else happens within the female, at least reproductive system. So we cover some of those basics because some people truly don't know that information, you know, how to track their cycle, you know, what do certain hormonal imbalances mean, things like that. So that's like the early side, you know, maybe curious to learn more, or maybe they've just started trying or whatever at that point. You know, it ranges from something like that to somebody who's actually been diagnosed with a fertility related condition, whether it's like PCOS or endometriosis or fibroids or, you know, whatever it may be. We cover that, and maybe their questions are more around, you know, actual conditions, certain procedures, side effects of different medication. We do kind of like get into some nitty-gritty details around those specifics. And then we also have a section of our site that I'm particularly passionate about called Costs and Coverage. And basically in there, we talk a lot about insurance benefits, how to save money on fertility treatment, which is a big one here in the US. You know, we don't have like NHS level coverage for fertility treatment. So, and every state kind of handles it differently. So we make sure that everyone is super clear on, you know, what they're entitled to in their state and how to save money, or, you know, use your benefits to your best advantage. Our cost and coverage section is a personal kind of passion of mine, because I do feel like that area is one that really just needs to be demystified.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm sure that information actually is really useful, because I do appreciate how difficult it is in the US with funding. Unfortunately, we in the UK, we have what's called the postcode lottery. So while some areas of the UK will provide some fertility treatments, others don't. So it's quite a lot of disparity actually in the UK, which isn't great. But thinking about the plans for you, what's your ambition for co-fertility? Where do you kind of see things going? What would you like to achieve with it?
I just want to make sure that co-fertility is just a welcoming place for anyone who ever has a fertility related question. You know, whether they're finding us on social or, you know, via search or coming directly to our site, I want people to feel, you know, when they come to our site for answers, however they're getting there, that they can feel confident and trusting in the information that they are getting and feeling empowered to making informed decisions when it comes to their fertility. And, you know, if we can bring them like a little bit of a sense of humor and some personality along the way to make sure that our content just is super relatable and you know, allows our users to feel very comfortable, then that's an added bonus too.
Absolutely.
Well, good luck with it. I mean, there's, like we always say, there's no stupid question. So hopefully it encourages people to continue to ask the questions, because I think that's part of the thing, isn't it? Like you say, if you've woken in the middle of the night and you just suddenly thought of something that you didn't ask in your consultation, and then you don't know who to ask, you've got to wait till the clinic's open to be able to find somewhere that you can hopefully see if that question's already been answered, then it definitely gives you peace of mind, because we do know there's so much overwhelm with so much information. So best of luck with it all.
Thank you.
I'm quite concerned what on earth is going on outside. It sounds like you're having like a massive disaster with all the fire engines that are going.
I know. It's not even like that. I just took my headphones out for a second just to hear what it actually sounds like. I feel like program that we're using, it must be like super sensitive, because it's not even that loud. And I'm on the 12th floor. So, but I do hear it, but I'm surprised you guys can hear it.
Yeah,
that loud.
I can really hear it.
That's great. No, that means that this is like super good quality.
Before we let you go, Ariel, just again, like as far as how you're at and how you feel and the support that you're getting, would you say it's been life-changing being a part of the like online community as to how it's kind of been carrying you along?
Oh yeah. I mean, for me personally, you know, aside from just like the company and the site and everything, for me personally, you know, social media is just really an amazing outlet just to connect with others who are going through similar stuff. I said to my husband the other day, like, I don't know what people did before this, because it truly is, you know, it can be a very isolating experience, and, you know, infertility does not discriminate. It affects people all over the country, all over the world. It's 1 in 8 American couples here in the US. I believe in the UK, I think it's 1 in 7. Is that right?
It's 1 in 6.
Oh, 1 in 6. Wow. Yeah. So it's super, super common. And, you know, but you might not necessarily live like very close to others who are going through the same thing. And it's just, it's really, it allows people, you know, that sense of connection. So I think social media has just really offered a really amazing tool for people to just connect with others going through similar experiences.
Okay, so just kind of to finish off, Ariel, we tend to ask all of our guests what they would say to their younger fertile self if they could go back. Now, we've kind of jumped that on you a little bit, so you kind of we've not really prepared you for it, but just one little tip. What would you, if you could meet your younger self, sit down, have a coffee, what would you say?
I've been thinking a lot about the idea of having patience lately, because I would say that's not my best quality, but infertility kind of forces you to learn patience.
Definitely.
So yeah. And so I would probably just encourage my younger self to just like stop being so type A and like impatient and just kind of, you know, buckle up and expect that it's going to be a long ride, but that's okay. And to just have patience, stay busy, and just kind of like enjoy the ride as much as you can with other parts of your life. And I think I've done that. I think I've done that, but I think it would have been nice to like have somebody specifically say that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. One of the things that I really encourage is that women learn to live their life while they're going through a fertility journey and, you know, put all the nice things in. Don't stop, don't put life on hold. I think it's the temptation to put life on hold and not book a holiday, not take that promotion, you know, not do all of the things that actually you should still continue to do because, you know, you think, well, I don't want to go on holiday because actually I might be pregnant by then, or I might have my next cycle of IVF by then, or whatever. So I think you're absolutely right. Is be patient and put back those things back into your life, those things that give you joy.
Totally, absolutely.
And you mentioned your husband, Ariel. From a support point of view, I'm always really keen to shine a light on the kind of male side of this. Has he found the support from the site that you've built? Do you get many men getting in touch?
Do you know men? And I probably should have mentioned that, you know, from the beginning, and part of why, you know, I created Co-Fertility was because I felt like everything that was out there, aside from the sites that I mentioned, you know, like really outdated forums and clinic sites and whatever, other sites out there just felt a little too like rainbows and butterflies and like fluffy and pinks and, you know, just not me. Not me at all. And also, like, I felt like men were getting left out of the conversation, you know, not only men, but just all genders. And I felt very strongly from the beginning that we needed to address LGBTQ, male factor fertility, you know, options for everyone to build their families, just because it seemed like they were getting left out of the conversation. And at least when it comes to male factor infertility, that's responsible for, at least in the US, 30% of all infertility cases are due to male factor. 30% are female factor, and I think like the remaining third are like kind of somewhere in between. So it's super important that we speak to, you know, male factor infertility causes, because otherwise, you know, that's information that could really be helping that 30% of people. So, and we actually tend to get a lot of questions about our male factor content and a lot of traffic to that content too. So I know there's definitely a lot of appetite for it, and hopefully we're addressing it well. And we're definitely going to be creating more male focused content going forward.
And what about you personally? Do you think your other half started to talk more, talk to other people?
Oh, sorry.
Or is that something that you guys talk amongst yourselves?
Yes. He isn't definitely not as like public as I am, for sure. He's like a more private person, but that's just like with anything on social media, not just fertility related. That's just like how he is. Yeah. But no, I mean, I think I've definitely kind of helped him open up a little bit too, you know, considering he usually is a very private person. But yeah, no, he's super supportive. I absolutely could not be doing all this without him. I can't imagine, you know, you hear about some couples that really, really struggle during this time. And, you know, certainly we have our good days and our bad days like everyone, but he's just an amazing support system. And, you know, in every sense of the word, in a physical sense, like actually giving me my injections, to just like an emotional support side of things. He's just incredible.
It's good to hear. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, it was so great chatting with you guys.
Thank you
so much.
Have a good day.
All right. Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
So we will put the details of CoFertility in the show notes. And as you heard Ariel talk about, she wanted to provide answers for the massive amount of questions that we all have when we are trying to navigate our way through this infertility space that we have unfortunately found ourselves in. And that is one of the reasons why I was so chuffed to have Kate co-host on my podcast, because she's really good at answering the questions too. And you can email us, talkfertility@gmail.com, with your questions. There are no stupid questions, as we said during that chat with Ariel. They're so varied, and we're going to do a couple because there are so many different specifics that you want to know about. So these two are totally unrelated, but I think it's quite good, kind of a good range. The first one is about ERA. Kate, do you want to just share the question and explain?
Yeah, so we had a question from a lady who'd been recommended ERA testing and wanted to know if anyone else had had this. Was it worth it? And was the test recommended due to repeat implantation failures? So ERA, or for its full name, endometrial receptivity array, is a relatively new test for women who suffer with recurrent implantation failure or recurrent miscarriage. So it's well worth asking your doctor about it if you fit into that category. By no means is it suitable for every woman, but it's certainly worth having those discussions with your doctor and finding out whether this is something that you could consider. What they do is, by using a really small sample of endometrial tissue, the ERA test claims to establish the best day for embryo transfer with IVF. So the ERA test kind of looks to see whether the endometrium is receptive or not at the time of sampling. And by analyzing a number of genes involved in endometrial receptivity, it's able to do this and then identifies kind of your personalized window. So it might suggest that actually this day isn't correct, but another 2 or 3 days down the line might be correct. There's quite limited research at the moment. There's one study in 2018 that showed no increased benefit, and it definitely needs more research. And unfortunately, it is quite expensive. So as I said at the beginning, I think as with all of these extra tests and IVF add-ons, discuss the benefits with your doctor and also ask if there's any risks associated so that you can really make an informed decision.
Is this an add-on generally?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Because I was just looking for it on the HFEA traffic light system, which if you are wanting to understand more about add-on treatments, you can have a look at that system to find out whether there is enough evidence around it, which means it's either got a red, amber or green mark. And it's still a very controversial way of ranking these treatments, because we are talking about a new and constantly developing science, ultimately, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think ERA is too new at the moment. It's obviously not, doesn't feature, but like I said at the beginning, it's specific for certain categories of women and not, definitely not for all.
Now, the other question that I was keen to get your thoughts on, because it's one that's been discussed in my closed Facebook group, is about the knock-on effect of having IVF drugs. And we've had an email asking about any kind of advice to kind of detoxify. Do you want to just share that question?
When you're taking any medication, whether it be for fertility or whatever, then there can be a bit of a knock-on effect. It might take the body a little while to absorb that medication. And if you look at things like general anesthetic, that can take months to be out of your system. So all of these medications can have some long-term residual effect, which is why often you're not recommended to do back-to-back IVF rounds, so that you give your body a chance to kind of get back to neutral, if you like. So I think certainly the best way that you can detox is to get lots of sleep, look after yourself, eat really well, do all the normal things that you should be doing, and let the body just naturally come back to normal. It is a process and it can take a little while. And certainly after an IVF cycle and the IVF medication, that your next cycle can be delayed. You might find you have a longer cycle. Your period may be later than you would normally expect. And that is perfectly normal.
And if it's had an impact on digestive system, thyroid, things like that, go and get more medical advice?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the thyroid is really, it's quite interesting, the thyroid, because even a woman who's pregnant can, you know, then have a baby and actually then have problems, the thyroid kind of goes a little bit out of kilter. So the thyroid is quite sensitive. So if you've been found to have thyroid issues, it might be that you had thyroid issues before, but they just weren't diagnosed. So it might not necessarily be a knock-on of the medication. But if you're concerned, definitely go and seek some medical advice. And particularly with digestive symptoms, it'd be best to get to go and speak to your doctor about that to see what they can do.
Thank you for that, Kate. And if you've got questions, then just get in touch on our email, which is talkfertility@gmail.com. And of course, you can follow us on our socials. I'm at Fertility Poddy on Insta and Twitter.
And on Instagram, I'm Your Fertility Journey. And on Twitter, I'm Fert Journey.
Now, one thing you'll know from previous Talk Fertility shows is I like to share some of the archive episodes that I've shared on the Fertility Podcast as I head even closer to my fifth birthday of publishing. And you've just heard all about an interesting resource that is available for you for information. And when you're just kind of starting out on your fertility journey, kind of one of the defaults is to look for apps. And I had a conversation with my lovely co-host, Kate Davis, a couple of years ago now about fertility apps and which ones were good and which ones weren't. So I wanted to share a little bit of that with you. And as part of my app review episode, I caught up with Phil Drews, who is the founder of ovulationcalculator.com, another app. So you're going to hear from the pair of them now. And be sure to visit thefertilitypodcast.com to listen to over 250 episodes all about your fertility with regards to stories people are sharing, as well as expert interviews. Pretty much a continuation of what you've been enjoying listening to here on Talk Fertility. So what would be your overview of the different fertility apps that there are available?
Well, I wanted to write the blog initially because there are so many apps out there of various different accuracy. Some are apps that are just used standalone, and some are apps with other methods, for example, a temperature recording method. And I think women do get really, really confused about what is a good app or monitor to use. So that's why I wanted to do a bit of my own research, looked into each of the ones that I could find currently on the market. And I suspect even since I've written that blog, there are more available now as well. And I just wanted to really nail down and see which ones were accurate and actually worth purchasing. Some of them are, you know, you don't pay for, and some do cost more and come with a sensor. And I guess in essence, you do get what you pay for. And I think I wanted to show women that actually just purchasing an app that worked using a calendar method, which is literally looking at a normal 28-day cycle and saying, right, you've got a normal 28-day cycle, therefore you ovulate on day 14. How actually rarely do women ovulate on day 14? And therefore this calendar method of app actually not worth you using. And not only that, it just stresses you out. So I think the whole idea was to have a look at the ones that were the good, and the ones that are good tend to be the ones that are with a way of recording a temperature as well, and really work out which would be the best ones value for money.
And would you say the ones that are good come with a price tag?
They do, but they don't necessarily have to be extremely expensive. There are some that are more expensive and there are some that are better price. And I think it's just doing your research, having a read of my article and then making a decision on what would be right for you. I think that's really important.
Okay, well, I will share all the links because there's so many different ones. There's one you can have on your neck and there's one that you can have in your ear. And the one that we're going to talk more about is one that actually involves a vaginal sensor. Now, I'm curious as to whether any of the gents that are listening to this are going to be like, really, that exists? But tell me more about how it works.
That's right. And that's a really, really accurate way of monitoring your temperature. So if you think about BBT, for example, generally you use a thermometer in your mouth. You shouldn't use it under the arm because it's not very accurate. So therefore a skin sensor, and there are some of those on the market for fertility apps and monitors, aren't particularly accurate because the way of monitoring by skin just doesn't have the technology yet. So the main modes of action for correct BBT recording are mouth, vaginally or anally. Now, clearly, probably not every woman wants to use the route of anally. And the thermometer that you use orally, although accurate, can be subject to disturbances. So, for example, things like room temperature, if you've had your mouth open, if you've had that glass of water before you take your temperature, if you're unwell. And so, therefore, with the vaginal sensor, and particularly with Ovisense, that it's able to take measurements every 5 minutes throughout the night. So you're not just getting one isolated temperature in the morning, you're getting reading temperatures throughout the night and from a very, very, very accurate area.
Okay, I was going to ask when you wear it. So whilst you're sleeping?
Absolutely. Take it out and then in the morning, wash it, put it close to your mobile device and it downloads the data from the night before straight onto the device. You wear it throughout the cycle. You don't wear it when you're bleeding.
Right.
The reason with that, although it's been highly tested and it's used very sensitive material, it's a class 2 registered device, so meaning it's a medical grade vaginal sensor. We don't recommend that you use it during the time that you're bleeding. Various different reasons, but one, although we've not have any information to say that's necessarily the case, but just with a tampon, you wouldn't want to keep a tampon in for too long with risk of toxic shock syndrome. Sorry, you put my teeth in this morning. Then equally, you wouldn't want to do that with the sensor. So what you do is you wait till your bleed has stopped and then you start using the sensor for the rest of your cycle. You can stop after ovulation if you like, but I do tend to recommend carrying on after ovulation because I can get a lot of diagnostic information with regards to the luteal phase and the progesterone during the luteal phase.
And what about what it looks like and is it comfortable to wear? Because that was my initial thought.
It's about the size of a tampon. It's kind of white in colour. It's a lovely silicone. It's really nice and soft. And it has a little tail that protrudes out at the end so that you can basically catch hold of that and pull it out. It's really comfortable to use. And just like if you use a tampon, you generally don't feel it if you've got it in the right place. Or sometimes if you put a tampon in not quite far enough, then you feel a little bit uncomfortable. But again, with a sensor, as long as you pop it up nicely inside, and clearly it can't go anywhere. A lot of women are a bit concerned about their anatomy and worry that it's going to get lost. It can't get lost because you've got your cervix at the end, which won't let that through. And then it just is nice and comfortable in the vagina and you shouldn't feel it.
What about any concerns people might have about any radio waves it's projecting out?
It doesn't project anything out. The only time that it does that is once you've removed it, washed it, and you put it next to the reader, and then it will download the information. So it's not downloading anything at all when it's inside you. Not at all.
And there's just one size?
Yes. And one size generally fits all. We've not really had ladies with any concerns about needing a smaller or a larger one. Ladies often prefer to take it out when they pop to the toilet. If they have to get up in the middle of the night, they'll just take it out and you can pop it straight back in again. It doesn't cause any problems with the temperature recording. So how it works, it takes temperature readings every 5 minutes overnight. And it's looking for your changes in progesterone, which indicate ovulation. It takes these 5 minutes temperature, so it's really, really, really accurate. A lot more accurate than, for example, using ovulation predictor kits, OPKs. They measure luteinizing hormone in your urine and they're not particularly accurate and give you false positive results, especially if you have PCOS, for example. So it's a nice way of monitoring your temperature that is convenient. You know, you're not having to take that temperature first thing in the morning and it doesn't have the subject to the disturbances in the same way that you would with an oral temperature.
And I guess it's one less thing to worry about. If you can do it whilst you're sleeping, you can just get up and go, so to speak.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of ladies I've found that when I chat to them, they actually don't find it stressful. They find it really reassuring and they get quite excited about taking it out and downloading their data. And it plots it on a nice graph that you then can look at. And you're looking for a biphasic curve. So you're looking for temperatures in the follicular phase to be lower. Then you get the temperature rise and then your temperatures then stay elevated in the luteal phase before they drop down at the time of your next period. And our clinical trials have proved that Ovisense is able to predict ovulation. So it gives you a warning of ovulation with 96% accuracy and confirms ovulation with 99% accuracy. So it's very accurate.
It is brilliant. And the feedback is people are so happy, aren't they?
Yes. Incredibly. Yeah, I think they just feel they're learning something about their body. They've got an awareness of what's happening with their body, which is so important. They feel like they've taken back control, which often when you're going through a fertility journey, you lose that control. It becomes very, very stressful. So they feel that they can really see what's going on. They're getting a great picture. We can then give them feedback on what's happening for their fertility. They can take this to their consultant if they want to, and their consultant can see and prove often, certainly with PCOS ladies, that, hey, actually, you know what? I am ovulating, just not every month. And I'm ovulating later in the cycle than anyone would expect me to do. So no wonder when I had that day 21 progesterone done that it was negative or that the result was really low because actually I hadn't ovulated yet. So it gives us so much information.
What about any concerns people might have if they're working shifts or they're not sleeping at normal times? Because there's a minimum time you have to wear it, isn't there?
So we do have a lot of ladies actually that work night shifts and things like that. And it's fine. They can wear it when they sleep during the day, but they need to have it in for a minimum of 4 hours, which generally most people are getting 4 hours sleep.
That's at least.
night. Let's hope. Yeah. Let's hope.
Now, I want to talk about cost of this with you. But first of all, about the community aspect that comes with it. So what is there available with OvuSense?
There's lots of levels of support. OvuSense has a Facebook users group. That's a fantastic group of a good few thousand women, actually, who are incredibly supportive to one another. If they've got a query, whether it be a technical query or a more of a medical query for me, then they're able to write this into the group and tag us. They also, all ladies will have free email access to me, unlimited. And also they can arrange a consultation with me as well, where I can advise on how they can optimize their ability to conceive, look at their charts, give them some feedback, and really help them move forward on their fertility journey. And then we also have a technical support from the girls in the office. So any concerns with their sensor or any worries about anything, they'll get an answer pretty immediately once they send an email.
Okay, so pretty impressive service. And the price tag for all of that?
There's two options. So if a lady wants to buy the sensor and a starter pack with 1 month free subscription to the app included in that, then that's £99. If a lady would like to buy the starter pack, which includes a 12-month subscription, that is $199. And so anyone who just chooses to pay as you go, if you like, and there's just a fee, and I know you're probably going to ask me how much, and I can't remember, a fee for just using the sensor on a monthly basis. But the beauty of that is you can stop and start. If you're going on holiday and you think, I just don't want to use it for a month, I don't want to think about fertility, then you can stop it and restart. Or if you get pregnant, clearly, which is what we hope, then you can just stop your subscription.
And if people are experiencing issues second time round, so secondary infertility, is this something as well that they can use? I mean, for someone like me who is thinking it might just happen naturally, even though we're probably going to need to have treatment again, but isn't really doing anything to monitor what's going on. Could be quite useful, couldn't it?
Completely. And we've got a lot of ladies who have got secondary infertility that are using it to, you know, see what's happening, especially with, you know, ladies who are perhaps, you know, in their late 30s or whatever, that really want to make the most of any time that they have available. And then, as I mentioned, we've got women who are using it while they're going through IVF, for example, to look at timing of any procedures that they're going through. So there's multi-use. Really.
Tell me a bit about your background and reasons for creating the ovulation calculator website.
Well, I come from a tech background, and back in 2006, my wife and I obviously wanted to try to have a family, and we were struggling. We tried for about 12 months, like most couples do before they seek help. And then when we went to get checked up, they found that basically I had a zoospermia where there was a lack of sperm, and we went through IVF and eventually had twins. So it all worked out well in the end. Luckily enough, we got pregnant on a second IVF round.
That's good to hear. And at that time, were you and your wife, were you using any kind of apps for her to track her cycle, or was she noting it down on a chart?
No, we didn't really look online. We just went to the doctors. But even after we had the twins, the twin girls, I was still working in tech companies. And it wasn't until 2014, the end of 2014, that I actually got involved with Ovulation Calculator. So it was quite a few years later. Initially, it was just using the standard predictions, but we were gathering data.
Well, that's one thing I want to talk about, how you're different, because I can see from your website you talk about how you privately and securely learn your users' cycles. So that is quite a claim of how specific you can be. And obviously when you're using an app and, you know, you're reliant on it and you become so absorbed with tracking it when you're trying to get pregnant, you know, you're hoping that it's spot on. And you say you give your users the perfect information exactly when they need it. So without giving all your secrets away, how are you different to other ovulation apps?
Initially, we use the standard algorithm to work out ovulation, you know, based on the last menstrual period and the cycle length and luteal phase. Whilst we were collecting data, we started to analyse the data and think, okay, what can we ask for users, or what can we get which could potentially pinpoint ovulation more accurately? Not for everyone, but for the majority. We started collecting basal body temperature, cervical mucus, cervix position, emotions, symptoms, and we started to analyse that and try and find patterns. And our algorithms now, what they do is they look at aggregated data after they've joined and they start giving us their data and their cycles. We can start to match that with our aggregated data and will increase the strength of their predictions.
Okay. Now, I know you've got quite staggering numbers for the number of women using your site. I don't know how up-to-date the website is, but I saw over 350,000 women using the site each month, and you've recorded over 3,000 pregnancies in the last 60 days. Because you've got a really lovely online community, a kind of message board, and it's really nice to see people interacting and sharing their successes. So that's obviously a valuable part of what you're offering as well.
We built that probably about a year in. And luckily, the community's been a really friendly and helpful community where the users are helping each other, sharing their experiences, also supporting each other as well.
Because you've got, as well, quite interesting people in your team. Robin, who's one of your pregnancy experts, a trained doula, and has written numerous books, so you're always putting out content. And I know you've also had Dr. Alan Pace, who's been a guest on this podcast. So you've got a real range of people inputting. So it's not just a tracking app.
That's what I was going to mention next. It's not just about the predictions as well. It's about the education. And we've reached out to a lot of experts. We say to our users after they've joined, you've got our tracking system where you can enter in all your daily cycle and we can help you with your predictions. But, you know, even then, cycles can change from cycle to cycle. So you really need to read our knowledge. And we send them an email every few days just telling them about new knowledge they should read. And from the feedback we get from users, that's really helped them just understanding their body more and understanding exactly what's going on and helping them know the signs of ovulation. Even if the prediction's not right, they've learned something. We've helped them from our education and they can, a lot of the time, work out when they're ovulating from just from that power of knowledge.
Phil, as far as how people can access the app, you just, as you would, go to the app store on your phone, download it. It's really user-friendly. Is it free?
Yes, it's free. So we've got three platforms. Like, you can use the website just by going to ovulationcalculator.com, or you can go to the Apple App Store and find it under Ovulation Calculator, or the Android Play Store under Ovulation Calculator.
So there's plenty more episodes like that at thefertilitypodcast.com. Or, of course, you can subscribe via your favourite podcast app. And we'll be back here on UK Health Radio next week.